Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
You are a human animal. You are a very special breed. For you are the only animal who can think, who can reason, who can read.
From KCRW Santa Monica, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. Today, my guest is someone I've longed to talk to for a very long time. His name is David Plant. His new book is called ABC, and it's published by Pantheon. He is the author as well. I'm not going to go from first to last. There are around 14 novels, but the first, which had attracted my attention by its very title, was The Ghost of Henry James. His second, Slides, had a cover by David Hockney that was very beautiful. And before I knew it, he was writing a trilogy, The Family, The Woods, The Country. And at that point, people began to find David Plant a writer that if you read once, you would want to read because the effects and conditions of his novels were so extraordinarily special, precise. People would alternate between saying radiant and harrowing. But I think that Philip Roth, who said harrowing, was as correct as the people who would say radiant. And now his novel, ABC, has come out. And I wanted to begin by asking you, I've been rereading some of the books, and from the very beginning, not just by title, ghosts have been important to you. In one form or another, they appear in almost all of the books.
You know, I'm not as aware of that as you are because I haven't read my novels. Once they're finished, I put them away. But yes, I can see that. And in ABC, the dead as ghosts come back and actually are very important. Well, my feeling is that the dead seek meaning from the living. The dead in themselves, I'm afraid to say, have no meaning. We give them meaning. They depend on us for giving significance to our lives. It's a very primitive thing, and in ways I like to think of myself as somewhat primitive in my longing for the dead to have some meaning for us, to guide us, and perhaps even to pray for us, to intercede with the higher being and try to prepare us for whatever our deaths will reveal to us.
Now, from very early on, your narrators have said that they are not in a condition of belief. Many of them very specifically do not believe in God. And in fact, in your last novel, The Age of Terror, one of the characters says, in under conditions that seem quite correct, that grief has replaced belief.
That is so true. Yes, there's a deep element of grief in my writing, and particularly in ABC, which is about grief. What I wanted to do in ABC, if I can be specific about that novel, is to create a sense of what I can only call global grief. There are four main characters. One has a son die, which is in an accident, and creates private grief. The second character finds that her daughter has overdosed on heroin. And that creates a wider aspect of grief in that it extends into the whole world of drug addiction, cabals, worldwide situation, affliction. The third character has his wife die in a terrorist attack in Athens. And in Greece, there was actually a terrorist organization called November the 28th, which existed. So I used that somewhat, fictionalized it. And the third is a woman from Chechen. Now, I wanted to go beyond fiction and what my own imagination could come up with in terms of horror, the harrowing in the world. And I found a newspaper article in The Observer in London about the war in Chechen and the unspeakable horror of it, unspeakable horror, so that it extends beyond the personal into something called war, which is global. I believe that we grieve now for the world in a way that we never did before. And I want to try to express that global grief. Now, what are the consolations? The consolation of grief is a sense of our common humanity. And I hope that, in the end, does come across in tragedy. Tragedy does bring us together in a way. Grief, tragedy. So if I don't believe in an ultimate God, I believe in the human capacity to be aware of the globe we live in as a globe, as an entity, which needs to be saved.
In this book, ABC, by my guest David Plant, published by Pantheon, the characters discover that they, among others, are seeking the source of the alphabet, not just its source, but a particular aspect. That is to say, why is the alphabet inevitably cross-culturally in the order that it's in? Why is it A before B before C, going back to the Phoenicians, before the Greeks, the Hebrew, the Latin, and as if the alphabet is some kind of ancient expression of a code or system that communicated something in the very nature of its order. This idea has been with you for a considerable amount of time, I've read.
Oh, for years and years. It occurred to me many years ago to wonder, why is the alphabet arranged the way it is? Something we take totally for granted. And after all, it is the element of our writing. We write in letters, we write words, but we use the alphabet. So it's the essence of our writing. Why is it ABC? Well, I looked into the Latin alphabet, pretty much arranged the way ours is, the Greek, the Hebrew, the Arabic, Sanskrit, and Cyrillic, and Armenian. And I did some research. Not much, because I didn't want to impose too much research on the book, and found that the earliest example of ABC, as we know it, was 16th century BC Ugaritic. Ugarit was a town in northern Syria, which was destroyed by the Phoenicians, in fact. So it was pre-Phoenician. And it was a very literate town, which kept libraries of clay tablets in cuneiform. Well, when the Phoenicians destroyed the city, burnt it down, the clay tablets became terracotta, so they were preserved. And some of them contain, in cuneiform, A, B, C. Students were learning their ABCs almost 4,000 years ago. So this in itself made me think, who arranged the alphabet? And why was it arranged in the order that we still have it? Was there some kind of message involved? It was a highly religious society. They had their own god, Baal, who would descend into the earth and rise up at various seasons with sacrifices and whatever. So I thought, okay, I'll use this idea as fundamental to the aspect of writing.
I want to ask you what I'm afraid is going to be a difficult question.
Try.
It seems to me that the precondition for writing a novel for you is to ask a question that can't and maybe mustn't be answered. So that in the last novel, The Age of Terror, there's a prolonged dream in which the hero asks to be shown essentially the worst, and viewing scenes of torture says, no, this is not the worst. This has been imagined. I want to see what cannot be imagined, what hasn't been imagined yet. I want to see the ultimate. Right. I want to see the future as far as this is concerned. It's quite a disturbing dream, and I realize that the desire is there to move beyond the known, to the future or to an origin. Here in this book is what came first, these gods. In the Bhagavad Gita, God is announced as the breath that forms the letter A. Mm-hmm. In the Christian Bible, as the Alpha and the Omega. Here it is, what is the nature of the beginning that begins God in the alphabet? So I wanted to ask you about that need for some form of ultimacy.
Well, I think I can only answer that difficult question by being very personal, if that's all right.
Please.
I was brought up in a small Catholic parish in Providence, Rhode Island, but a very particular kind of parish, Franco-American. Now, we're ghosts in this country. Very few people know what a Franco-American is. Very few people know, for example, that Jack Kerouac was a Franco-American. And he himself has written that his deepest inspiration was that of being a Franco-American. So is mine. But we're unknown. We have no national identity. The religion of this parish, which was French-speaking, Monsieur le Curé, the pastor, could not speak English. I grew up in a school, a parochial school, where we had French in the morning and English in the afternoon. Mind you, Canadian French. In fact, as an aside, I found out at some point that whereas I had already always thought of myself as being a first-generation American because my father was born in French Canada, I'm actually an 11th generation North American, including an Indian heritage, in that my great-grandmother was a Blackfoot Indian named Klish Kiru. Okay, the religion was very dark. We were brought up to believe that life is suffering, and we earn our heaven through our suffering. So suffering became in itself something almost sacred towards an ultimate. And what was the ultimate? It was life eternal with God. This world was nothing compared to life eternal with God. That was our reward. That gave our suffering meaning. I don't believe in God. But the sense of the ultimate was inculcated in me to such an extent that I longed for it. So there's a conflict in me between belief or non-belief, I should say, and longing. The longing is very powerful. Do I believe in eternity? No. Do I long for eternity? Passionately.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking with David Plant on the occasion of the publication of his most recent novel, ABC, published by Pantheon. We'll continue after this short break. We'll be right back. I'm Michael Silverblatt, this is Bookworm, and I'm talking with David Plant about his new novel, ABC. I noticed that the concept of the other world is a stable concept in your work, and that this is not an easily delivered homily. In fact, David Plant's novels seem to play the difficulty of a certain thought against people's tendencies to treat it as if it were a cliché, you know, in the other world we'll all be saved or happy. But no, there seems to be inevitably an idea that there is something beyond this world, whether that's that if we were to think of what we know as a set, that beyond the set of what we know is the other world, and this includes arrangements of light and qualities, timbres of weather, that there is an area of enunciation of the unknown that, in a sense, goes without saying in your work. From it, from this other world, ghosts or the possibility of them, they are an emissary, possibly philosophical, the mind's need to be spoken to by parts of itself that it can't reach, that it doesn't have access to, parts of itself or of its past. And so what I've been watching, and it's the occasion for tears, and crying is nearly a perpetual condition in these books, tears. As the books go on, as we enter what we unhappily call an age of terror, the calls from the other world thicken. They're nowhere as profuse as they are in ABC. And the sense that we are at some end of this world, that the other world is needed, that the unhappiness and the nostalgia will no longer be a recourse.
No. The need is very, very great. And I go often to, not often, from time to time to hear priests talk, thinking, well, maybe I'll hear something that I haven't heard before. And it always turns out that I haven't, that in the end, religion as we know it, as an institution, whatever, doesn't offer me much in terms of originality, but relies on received ideas and, it seems to me, cliches. Nevertheless, I go and I listen. Well, why is it, nevertheless, that the need for belief survives everything that disproves belief? The need is there, and it's very, very strong. Perhaps I should try to use my imagination now to imagine something that we do need rather than to imagine the harrowing suffering that the world endures. Perhaps that's a need, but I don't know if I'm up to it. I don't know what imagination would be required without its being sentimental, without its being pretentious, without its being a cliché. Some original vision to support at least the possibility of belief. Now, belief in what? I don't know. I don't know.
Now, my listeners are probably thinking, if they know him, of George Bernanos or something like that. But in fact, what you wouldn't suspect is that I'd say, I don't want to create strict demarcations, but beginning with the Catholic, sex and later still a certain level of violence are a part of the work. In fact, in the Catholic, there's one of the two more amazing prolonged sexual encounters that I know in modern literature. And there, too, the character says, I don't want to be sentimental, and I don't want to be cliched. I don't want to do the expected. Even the things I have not done yet have been done by others, and what I seek is the original.
Yes. Well, the Catholic, the scene you talk about is between two young men, and I called it the Catholic because I believe that one's spiritual life is, in fact, more important than one's sexual life, as important as one's sexual life may be. Is it possible, actually, that a sexual life may in itself partake of the spiritual? Extraordinarily, the Catholic has had a lot of influence on men who've come to try to come to terms with their sexuality and who wanted to remain spiritual. And I've been very moved by that. Was that my intention? No, my intention was a part of the vision I was talking about, that we are embodied in these bodies which will die, but they also have their impulses, and one of the strongest is sexual impulse, and you can't deny that. Can this be a part of one's spiritual life without its being obvious, without drawing parallels which may be banal, or more, without justifying sex? I don't want to justify sex in any way, but I want to reveal that it can be a source of torment and joy, and that it, one can reconcile sexuality and the spirit. And it's been a long time since I've read The Catholic. I know it was on the list of forbidden books by the Vatican, and that pleased me very much.
Now, in this book, ABC, the precondition to being on this quest is that the four characters you've described are sundered from some aspect of their family. A son, a daughter, a wife, and an entire culture in the final case of Chechnya. And the work has been engaged in examining the family, the country, the novel that Mary Gordon seems to like the best of your books, about the death of parents and how to disengage in a natural process without leaving them violently behind. But that violence of departure is also there in other books. So the family gets investigated as a potential source of human bonding that replaces perhaps the spiritual, or that we use in this world as our experience of what might be universal bonding in another world. I wondered about that.
Well, the family is about my family. I had six brothers. We were seven sons, Catholic family, working class. My father worked in a factory. They couldn't use contraception. It was forbidden. So son after son came. And yes, we bonded. Now, why did we bond? Because, in fact, the family endured all kinds of destructive happenings. My mother had terrible depressions. There was rupture in the family because of one of my brothers marrying a Protestant, credible as that may seem now. My father lost his job. And yet, we remained intact as a family. And I'm still very, very close to my surviving brothers. We're just five now, but deeply loving. I once asked a brother what he thought about the family. And he said, well, we know it's all fiction. But in fact, it is. But it is an attempt, I suppose, to show that love can accommodate. And I use the word englobe. It's a word I think I've invented to englobe, the verb. It can englobe disasters, catastrophes, whatever. And ultimately, I hope that's what I'm going to try to express in my writing.
Well, if that can be the case, I look forward to your next book.
Well, give me a bit of time.
I've been speaking with David Plant, the author most recently of ABC, published by Pantheon. Thank you, David, for joining me.
Thank you, Michael, very, very much.
You can read an excerpt from ABC at kcrw.com/bookworm. My associate producer is Melinda Siegel. The technical director is Mario Diaz, with production assistance from Alan Howard. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
Through the ages, back to days of old, when knights were bold and books.
Books, 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 books. Books. Books can be funny, too.
Books make you laugh and sing. Books tell you everything. They're your treasured friends in prose and rhyme.
Now it's Book of the Mouse Club time. The jungles you can go in books.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcast the most recent ones from our website. Go to kcrw.com/bookworm. Plus copies are available. For ordering information, call 310-450-5183.
Books tell you everything. They're your treasured friends in prose and rhyme.
Now it's Book of the Mouse Club time.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Reptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.